Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Kevin Lynch, 11 years of combination experience, fire chief for Bonduelle Area Fire Department in Wisconsin. Kevin got his foot into the fire service via the EMS side, where he started out as a medic with ski patrol. From there, a position came open on the fire department. Kevin applied and got his start. Although becoming fire chief wasn't on his radar since being appointed, Kevin made sure he took full advantage of resources around him by attending various leadership courses available and many outside training events. What stood out to me about Kevin is the fact that just because he's a fire chief, that doesn't mean he's above the people within his department. If he's instructing a class that requires the students to be in gear, Kevin is also in gear. He is wholeheartedly trying to better the organization and those he can impact within the fire service. Don't take my word for it, just have a listen. With that, I present Kevin Lynch.
Chief Kevin Lynch, Bonduelle Area Fire Department in Northeast Wisconsin. I've been doing this since 2014. Worked my way up from just a paid-on-call firefighter to training officer in 2017. Jumped to lieutenant in 2018. Still was in charge of the training division. 2021, I became an assistant chief here. And then 2022, I was put into the chief position. So I guess I kind of got started in the fire service. I jumped from EMS to fire. So I started, I started in the ski patrol prior to being EMS or fire. I snowboarded. I was looking for, something to do, snowboarding. And having some fun with that. Then I kind of got into the whole medical thing with ski patrol. From there, I'm like, okay, season's over and the winter time's over. So I was looking for something else to do. So from there, I went to, talk to our, local service director for EMS and went through school for that. Then fire department was looking for people. It's paid on call, volunteer, whatever you want to call it, always needs people. So I'm like, why not? Since I was a little kid, I always wanted to be a firefighter. I actually, prior to moving to Northern Wisconsin, I grew up in the Milwaukee area. So, watching those crews down there work on a regular basis, city I lived in, a suburb down there, was relatively busy. My uncle worked for the park system, and he actually got like an old fire truck put in as like a jungle gym because of me. So, it was one of those things where I always wanted to be in the fire service. After I got married, I tried in the community that we moved to, tried to apply for a fire department, but I did not look the way I do now. I had longer hair, goatee, pierced ears, I was in a heavy metal band. So it was one of those things. Nobody wanted that kind of person on their department, obviously.
Right.
They look at who the person looks like, not so much what the person actually, can do. So I'll be honest, I was disgruntled for a while about it. Didn't want to do anything with it. And then, it kind of built from there where I decided this is what I want to do. When I started out, I was full-time as a garbage man. I did garbage and recycling pickup and did firefighting, on the side as a volunteer paid on call. And there it was one day I'm like, I want my career to be public safety. I want to do fire. I want to do EMS, do this stuff full time. Mm-hmm. Up in our area, there's not a whole heck of a lot of full time career departments. It's one of those things where, unless you go and get degrees and everything, some of the departments up here don't even think about taking you. Mm-hmm. I have a wife, I have two kids who are grown now, but having the time to go and get that degree in the fire service is a little tricky. So I didn't go that route. I was able to get my EMT, I got my advanced EMT, I got my fire one, fire two, fire officer courses, inspector, all that kind of stuff, just plus any other class that I possibly could think of that I could go to just keep pushing forward in the fire service. And that's kind of what got me to this point today is, I kept pushing, kept looking at the traditions, kept looking at, all that kind of stuff, and just moved forward. And yeah, it turned into, just being that guy that was at the bottom right in the back seat to, the one that's first on scene, kind of running the show. And I still, I'm a fire chief that still wants to get his hands dirty. I don't like just standing there doing nothing. I don't like the idea of micromanagement. I want to do what I'm expecting my firefighters to do. So.
Okay. I love it. With that being said, can you tell us when, once you started getting those classes and going through the training, was there anybody in particular you kind of gravitated to, ones that were into the job, or is that something as soon as you got on, you were like, this is the firefighter I want to be?
So in the beginning, it was kind of that lax, laid back, just go with the flow of kind of the local idea of how things were kind of going. From there, I actually, in 2019, I applied as a teaching assistant for our local tech college for the fire program there. The person that was in charge of that program, he had more of that mentality of, hey, this is how we should be as firefighters. We should be, going above and beyond. Mm-hmm. And, that kind of helped me realize that local fires, department idea didn't always fit every aspect of the job. Not saying that, it was done wrong, but there's always that room for improvement. There's always that, that being able to push forward and, do the job above and beyond what people even expect of us, especially being a paid on-call department. They see, the vehicles at the station for a call, and then they see the, our apparatus leaving, lights and siren, and then they don't think anything of it. So it's one of those things that, I kind of gravitated to his ideas, as being kind of my boss there. And, he kind of helped push me in that direction of going above and beyond. And then from there, I started to go to, a lot more classes outside of our general area, beyond the tech college, and started to realize, hey, there is so much more to this job than, just spraying a little bit of water on a fire and, going back to the station.
Mm-hmm.
So, from there, I started meeting lots of firefighters through social media, through, FDIC was the first big convention that I ever went to. Different events where you'd meet all these different firefighters that, had different ideas on how the job should be. So from there, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, yeah, I can, I can take parts of this idea and I can take parts of this idea and, combine it and make it for what we should be doing in our area. So from there, being that I was training officer and then lieutenant and still in charge of that training division, I was able to start bringing those outside ideas into our department and start gradually building things. Trying to make our department, a better department. Again, not saying our department was a bad department.
Right.
We had that older style of volunteer style of doing things. Don't get me wrong. Volunteers, the volunteer fire service is great. Obviously, there's a lot of people in the volunteer fire service that are going out of their way, leaving home at odd hours, leaving their jobs, being late for jobs, stuff like that to go do the job. But it's hard to get the people in the volunteer service to want to do the extra because they don't have the time. I've been fortunate enough that once I got out of, basically driving garbage truck full time, I did that for 20 years to being able to, be in public safety full time. My schedule opened up a lot more to be able to do that kind of stuff. My work schedule, I work 48 hours a week, and then I'm able to do stuff for the fire department. So I can go out and train more. I can go, do all that kind of stuff. I'm able to attend more fires, more car accidents. I'm on a lot more calls because of that. We're not a super busy department. We don't have a lot of structured fires. I'd say we're more car accidents than anything, which is pretty common in general. But, we have our jurisdiction intersects with two busy highways in northern Wisconsin. So we have that, car accident problem all the time. So I think when I became chief, I think my first week we had like four car accidents. And like the first calls that we had as chief, we had a car accident, and then we had a secondary car accident like immediately after we got on scene. So this is one of those things where it's like, I've ran calls and everything, but now I'm that top guy. So it's one of those things where it got real nerve-wracking real quick because now it's like, okay, I have this many trucks, this many personnel, I have, five vehicles involved and two crashes, and it got a little overwhelming, and it did make me question, is this the route that I want to be? Do I want to still be that backseat firefighter, or do I want to be in this position? And after, dealing with that, some of those people that I had talked to over the years, I talked to them about it, some of the chiefs out there, and asked them, and they're like, it's going to feel like that for quite a while. So just push forward. So that's why, especially when I became chief, I started going to, different leadership classes and stuff like that to be able to be better at leadership side of things. Because, not saying I'm a great firefighter, but I felt I was a good enough firefighter. But when it came to the leadership side of things, I felt I was lacking on some of that higher level stuff that I felt was required to be a chief. And, it's so following, my old boss at the tech college helped quite a bit because he talked me through it because he was a chief for a different department. And it really, opened my eyes to all of that. And yeah, it's just been from there forward, I constantly am pushing. I'm constantly looking at, what we as a department and as a fire service need to be doing better. So it's definitely been an interesting ride. So I will say that.
At what point in your career did you start moving up the ranks and why?
So it would have been 2017. Yeah, 2017 is when I moved up from firefighter to our training officer position in the department. I kind of went for that position because I felt the need that we needed to improve our training for the department. Training wasn't horrible, but it was kind of lax at times. Weather conditions outside, well, we're not doing this. Or, it's raining out, well, we don't want to get outside to get wet. Or it's too hot out, too cold out, those kind of things. I'm like, we're in northern Wisconsin. The weather changes, as quick as you blink. Like it was raining maybe a half hour, 45 minutes ago here, and now the sun's starting to come up and it's already 85 degrees. So, and knowing the way it is around here, it could be snowing tomorrow. So, so it's one of those things like all of our calls we end up doing in, adverse weather. So I'm like, we need to be training in these weather conditions. We can't always be inside, the apparatus floor. Certain things, yeah, go on the apparatus floor to, build the initial skill. There's nothing wrong with that. But then we need to start taking it from there and moving forward and, actually pushing the skill in full gear, in crappy weather and stuff like that, so that we can do the job the way we need to, on the fire ground when it's needed. From there, 2018, we ended up with an opening for a lieutenant spot. So I put in for that position. I got promoted to lieutenant in, I think it was May of 2018. Sat in that position for a while. Another guy in the department that I was, really close with from the moment that I got on was also lieutenant. And it used to be where, the two of us used to team up all the time. We'd fight to get on the engine and, we were always teamed up. He was lieutenant for about a year before me, so we still were able to partner up. And then it was one of those things where, we no longer could be partners on a crew because we're both lieutenants, we're both expected to run crews. So then it turned into a, basically training guys to work the way that I liked to work on the job while we're fighting fire or while we're at a car accident scene. So, from there it just continued where I was teaching within the department while I was learning, my role as lieutenant. 2021 came along and it was a we had our assistant chief position opened up and I didn't even really ask for that promotion. It was kind of one of those things that, the chief at the time, wanted me to be in that spot and, kind of asked me, hey, would you be interested? I'm like, well, I guess why not? So, it was one of those things. I told him, I'm like, I still, every chance I get, I still want to be able to fight fire. So, and I was able to still fight fire. I was still able to do those kind of things as assistant chief. It wasn't very often that chief was gone, lived in the village and he worked in the village. So he was at most of the calls. So I didn't really have to run a lot of the calls. So when he retired in September of 22 or end of August of 22, I became acting chief September 1st of 2022. And then basically from there, fire commission made me interim like 9 days later. And then, it became official like the 13th of September of 22. Then I became official chief of the department. So, it was one of those things where it's like, who wants to do the job? Who's going to do the job? I was lucky enough to be in a full-time job that gave me the time to do this job. Because being on the ambulance, I work 48 hours a week, and our schedule there isn't your standard, fire schedules or anything. So we don't have a California or 4896. They're really good about, they kind of work with your schedule. So, and it's 48-hour work week. We don't have the extra, extra shift or anything like that that gives us the 56 or any of that. So, if I have to be off on, say, Tuesday, I just let them know, hey, Tuesday of, whatever day it is, I'm not available. So then they usually make the actual schedule 1 or 2 months ahead of time, and work with everybody's work schedules and everybody's personal schedules to give us the best home to work ratio, I guess you could say. That was a thing when when they became the directors of the ambulance service and then the service went full time, that they wanted to make sure that people could still have a life and, their schedule would work around it. So I lucked out that my schedule was able to work around the fire department as much as it does. I left there for a year and went to work for airport fire. And it was one of those things where it was a California schedule. So it, I'd have to get trades to be able to, work for department here for meetings, for trainings, stuff like that. If I had a fire commission meeting, I might be doing a commission meeting by phone or things like that. And, on top of it, it was a privatized department. So, we also, they wanted us to do security related stuff. They wanted us to do airport operations related stuff, not just fire and EMS. And to me, I did not like the fact that we didn't have the proper time for training. We didn't have the proper, proper manpower for responses and stuff like that. So I ended up going back to the ambulance full time because of the fact that I knew that I'd be able to work around the schedule there. So, I came back to the ambulance full time so that I could focus a lot more on my position on the fire department here as chief. And, I was able to work with, promoting two really good guys for my training division. And, I got all around, I got great officers that are, working under me that I'm not afraid when I am gone for them to run a scene without issues because we've all trained and worked together enough that, they've gotten that mentality that, the job comes first and you need to get it done. So it's been, it's been one of those things where we just definitely, have moved forward as a department. And it's getting better. We're getting equipment that, yeah, we don't need it now, but you know what? We might. So, we're moving forward with getting equipment. We're moving forward with doing different trainings that are getting us, in that position where, we might not have ever had a call like that before, but, that day is coming.
Right.
We had one of my firefighters, he's 45 years he's been on this department. And he said that during the 4th of July parade, we've never had a call during the parade. Well, this year we had a call during the parade, right at the beginning of the parade. So we had to leave the parade route and go respond to a car fire. So, that's something that for 45 years never happened. And now all of a sudden it did. So it's one of those things where it's like we're trying to plan ahead, for the changes that we have, going on. And, it's been working out so far. There's
Right.
always those hiccups here and there that, kind of screw us on those plans. Budget restraints obviously can be a problem at times. People having time certain times of the year. Obviously, it's hard to get people to be around as much during the summer because they want to go on vacation with their families. They want to be able to do that, but they also have full-time jobs that require them to, go 5 days a week. So then a weekend comes along and, all of a sudden I might become short-staffed that weekend. So it's a big, big battle on figuring out how we're going to do those kind of things.
Right. Okay. With that being said, can you tell us a little bit about your department? The size, how many personnel, apparatus, things of that nature?
So we are a paid on-call department or volunteer paid on-call. So all of our firefighters are paid firefighters. There's no set schedule. So we're paid for our calls. We're paid for our training meetings, all that. We cover for our main, fire district, we cover the village of Bondwell, which is approximately, I think it's like 1400, 1500 people. And then, and that's roughly, I think we're roughly 4 square miles or something like that.
Okay.
Or, yeah, it's something like that, 4 square miles or maybe a little less. And then we cover the township that surrounds us, town of Heartland that surrounds us, which is probably roughly 1,000 people in the township itself. And then we have auto aid agreements with departments in our area. So for any structure fire, for the departments north and south of us, any structure fire, we're paged out with them right away. And then the department to the west of us, there's a section that we automatically get paged out with them as well. And so we're auto aid for structure fires for all those. And then we have auto aid that comes to us for any structure fire within our district to increase our numbers for initial response as well. So our department currently has, including myself, 25 personnel. So we have myself as chief, I have two assistant chiefs, a captain, two lieutenants, two training officers, and then our head HEO or heavy equipment operator basically is our engine, our head engineer. Then we have other, whether they're firefighters or officers of the department that also operate. So we have the one that's just, he's kind of the guy you go to learn, and he's at almost every call that he can possibly make. He's the guy that you pull that line off of the truck, and by the time you get to the door, you got water. So, you know, he's, it was a position, we didn't have an official position like that. And I was like, you know, this guy's, he's one of the most valuable guys on the department to me. So that's why, you know, I made that position an official rank on the department because we didn't have that. So we generally every call we try to respond with a minimum of three apparatus. So we basically we have two engines. So we have a Pierce 2013 Pierce Sabre, so 6-man cab. We have a the other engine, it's only like a 2-man cab commercial chassis. Doesn't really get used a whole heck of a lot because you can only fit two guys in it or two firefighters in it. And then we have a rescue engine. So basically, that's a 2020 Pierce Enforcer rescue engine. So the 2013 Pierce and the 2020 Pierce go to every call. So they can both be used for suppression. The rescue engine carries all of our rescue equipment, jaws, struts, airbags, you know, all that kind of stuff. We're constantly adding more equipment to it to be able to cover more rescue-related stuff. So we do have like grain bin rescue equipment that currently it sits in the station. If we get the call, we grab it and throw it into our department pickup truck and move it. But I found a spot on the rescue that I can put it, so it's, you know, just a matter of moving it now. But so we have the rescue engine, we have two water tenders, 2,200 gallon water tenders, because part of our district, the village itself is hydranted, but the township is not, and a lot of our surrounding districts also are not hydranted. So we do a lot of water shuttles in northeast Wisconsin. So we have those. We have a, what is it, a 2024 Intimidator UTV with tracks, and it's got a water tank on it and also a patient transport unit on it. So for wildland stuff, we're able to use that. We also can use it for, we have a lot of snowmobile and ATV trails up in this part of the area. So we have an accident on one of those, we're able to transport, you know, a patient out of, you know, a trail. So we have that. And then we have is it a Chevy Silverado 1500 that's primarily for towing our UTV as well as patient, or not patient, firefighter personnel transport. It's not a brush rig or anything. So I mean, we have a decent amount of equipment. We have a tow behind generator, light tower, different things like that, that we can respond to. Our main engine, which is the 2013, that's also loaded with all of our rapid intervention gear. So if we got a district that we are their rapid intervention crew for, that's the rig that's going to go. We generally try to, train everybody on the department beyond the basic, tech school fire one, fire two, rapid intervention. We go above and beyond with that and just move forward, with trying to, go beyond what the school's teaching. And just we're working on building a better program with that as well, so that everybody's, up to snuff with being, the best they can at that as well. So, it's one of those things. I mean, we have some days where, yeah, we might only get five personnel that show up, and then there's other days that we're gonna get, all 25. But in most cases, our rescue engine and our engine are the first two out the door. From when the pager goes off to that first truck going out the door, averages 3 minutes for a paid on call department. People are coming from home from work, and it's still a 3 minute time period, which is, decent, very decent time frame considering. And I can usually have those two trucks full. So I have, 12 personnel between those two trucks pretty much every call. And then myself, I go straight to scene with my vehicle. So, then from there, the tender goes behind it, usually with two personnel. Yeah, usually two personnel will be in that tender, and just go from there, depending on if it's a structure fire or a car accident. Car accidents, the rescue is the first one out the door. Structure fire is the engine, the first one out the door. And then it's basically, yeah, the car accidents, the engine's second due, and for structure fires, the rescue engine's second due. So just kind of flip-flop which of those trucks is going to be, first out the door, depending on the call.
Is there a when a call drops, do you have a rule where the apparatus can't leave without a certain number of members, or how do you guys do that?
So in most cases, we try to make sure it doesn't, the engine or the rescue does not leave unless there's a minimum of four. So we want to make sure there's a minimum of four. And generally, I would say probably 99% of the time, we can meet that minimum of four personnel on the rigs. So, our tender, that can go out the door with one. That's not a problem. If we're going to our mutual aid, the tender has to leave with two, and the engine or rescue has to leave with six. We will not leave less. So, and I have yet for a Mavis call to be able to fill with that six. Our Mavis system is our mutual aid system. It's the mutual aid box lamp system is what it's called. But yeah, so if it's one of those calls, it is, it has to leave with six on an engine or rescue, and it has to leave with two on the tender. So, generally, if an engine's going, the rescue's not going, because we still want to make sure that we have enough personnel for our own calls. So we don't dump the station like the old days of mutual aid, where, yeah, you call the next department over and they dump every single truck out of the station. We have a system, in the state of Wisconsin, that, every department has, a certain amount that is able to go, but then we'll hold back to make sure that we're not depleting our resources. And if we don't have enough to send that truck, we decline, and they move down the list of, who's next on the list to call. And dispatch takes care of that. We basically just call a card number and, what level we want it at. So yeah, we're on a lot of people's mutual aid cards. to assist basically on that first level after the initial dispatch. So, that's where we get most of our fire experience. We don't have a lot of fires in our own district, but we go to fires in other districts quite often.
Okay. And roughly, approximately, how many calls are you guys doing a year?
Our average calls between car accidents, fires, all that is right around the 52 is
Okay.
the average, 52 to 55, something like that.
Okay.
So you can say it averages out, yeah, one a week. Sometimes we'll get that, 2 week, 3 week period where we get nothing, and then all of a sudden we'll just get slammed. So, then other times, yeah, it's, one a week. So, basically every month we have calls. So
Okay.
there's always something. We haven't had a month that we haven't had calls. So, we're out enough to keep everybody interested, I guess you could say, but not so much that we're also burning everybody out.
Right.
It's nice because, that is one of the things with volunteer paid on call service is the really busy departments, that do run paid on call. Your volunteers are just constantly running and not getting the sleep they need because they're going to their jobs, then they're running fire calls, and then they're going back to work, and they don't have that set career schedule where, yeah, on my day off, I don't have to respond to this call. And not that they're forced to respond, but generally if our firefighters are in the area and can make it to the station, make it to the trucks, they don't. I have yet to find really any that won't respond if they're available.
Okay. And of course, you guys run all fire related calls. Are you guys also first responders?
So a few of ours are first responders, because our EMS and fire are separate for our district. So EMS is first responder level, and then the city to the west of us sends their ambulance. So we do have first responders that are on both departments, the EMS department and the fire department. And then, certain situations, my firefighters can change hats, to help EMS on a scene or whatever. My biggest thing is, obviously I have firefighters that are on EMS. They respond as EMS to the scene. Then unfortunately, if I need them on the fire side of things, it's really hard to have them transition over because they don't have proper gear for it. Because pretty much every one of our firefighters has to come to the station. Our gear is all at our station. We don't generally carry it in personal vehicles. So,
Gotcha.
they can't easily transition on scene. So it's kind of become a thing where they respond as fire, and then if there's something that they're needed for EMS wise, then I'll let them shoot over to the EMS side of things, which part of that, me being EMS as well, I have that understanding that, yeah, EMS, we do have to prioritize that at times. So, if the first responder crew doesn't have enough personnel for something, I'm gonna have to, give up some of my personnel as long as I can afford to at that time, obviously, and have them take care of that. And once the EMS side of things is done, then yeah, I can pull them back to, assist on what I need to. And it also helps because situations like car accidents, when we're doing things like extrication or stabilizing, they're able to do that quick assessment as well while they're doing, the fire part of the job and, make sure that we know what's going on so that EMS knows ahead of time, the ambulance knows ahead of time. So it's one of those things. I know there's a lot of people that don't like the idea of fire-based EMS, but certain aspects of it are great because, your firefighters knowing the EMS side of things obviously, is going to help out in the long run with making sure that proper care starts from the get-go. So, a lot of our first responders will get to scene prior to fire because they're going straight to scene. They're not having to run to the station and hop in, apparatus and everything, so they can go straight to the scene. But same time, it's one of those things where most of them that are in the area are on the fire department. They're going to the fire department first, so they got to get there with the trucks. So it's, having people on both sides really is helpful to me. And it's helpful to the community, just because of the fact that, we're able to do all aspects of the job. And as long as, as long as you're on both departments, you can take care of starting patient care, even if you're on the fire department that day. So it's definitely helpful.
Okay. With that being said, I'm going to ask you, in your personal opinion, what does the term aggressiveness mean to you?
So, doing the job the way it's intended. So basically, it's a term that we throw around a lot nowadays in the fire service. We see it everywhere now. Classes, training groups, all that. But to me, aggressive is doing the job the way that it's actually intended. We by nature should be aggressive in the fire service. We're running into situations that require, a heightened mindset. You have to know what you're getting into. You have to do it quickly. You have to do it efficiently. Basically being aggressive in the fire service is, getting that training, getting those reps in to, do the job, and then taking that training and pushing it to the full extent of, what you can. We have to be making those searches. We have to be making an aggressive interior fire attack. We can't stand outside and think, well, maybe we can go in, maybe we can't. We need to be pushing, that limit and getting inside. If I pull up on a fire scene and all the windows but one, have smoke and flames blowing out of them, I want that crew going in that window. I want them to get inside and search that room. I want them to do it quickly and, do it as quick as they can, cover what they can, and of course, get out, because if conditions are already starting to get that bad, yeah, we don't know what's going to necessarily happen. But, aggressive, obviously, some people look at aggressive as being reckless and, going rogue. But to me, aggressive is just doing our job. It's a great job. It can be a fun job, but it is still an extremely dangerous job that we need to have our heads on straight to do it. You can't join a fire department, whether it's career, paid on call, volunteer, and expect that your t-shirt is going to get you, through the job without any issues. If you're not doing the training, you're not showing up to meetings, you're not showing up to calls, you're not learning, you're not going to extra classes, you're basically setting yourself up for failure. So you basically, I guess you could say, you have to be aggressive in the sense that you are going to actively seek what needs to be done to get the job done. So to me, I didn't really think much of the term aggressive when I started out. And then, that's when I started seeing, aggressive this, aggressive that. And it's like, okay, what exactly do they mean by aggressive? And then I started to, become aggressive, I guess you could say, and, start seeking all that extra training and extra time for the job. Listening to podcasts, going to extra trainings, talking to people from the smallest departments to the biggest departments, and, hearing their stories and how they would, do things. It's The fire service is just loaded with a wealth of knowledge throughout its memberships that, there shouldn't be anybody out there that does not know, what's going on out there.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. Which I was a volunteer. I started out as a volunteer, and I was on a department where I worked my way up to assistant chief of training, right? I had a white helmet, like I had a chief title. Did I need that? Looking back, absolutely not. I mean, I had a little bit of knowledge. I ran a lot of calls. I was on a career department as well, so I had that experience, but I don't want to say I had enough experience to be a fire, to be a chief, some sort of chief where I had a white helmet and everything else. But
Well, I understand
I
that.
have a friend of mine who was a fire chief at his volunteer department. And after a while, he started noticing when he would push the envelope on, hey guys, let's do this sort of training. And, in order for us to be better for the citizens, for the community, we got to do this type of training. We got to push to be better. And he started realizing and seeing that he had several members that just didn't want to do it. And one night he went home and he told me he laid his bed down, or he laid his head down on his bed and thought about, if something were to happen right now, how can he have the fortitude to look at that spouse's, at the firefighter's wife and be like, I did everything. I gave the best shot for your loved ones to come home when they didn't want to do it. So at the end, he ended up resigning. Like he was like, I can't do it. He's like, I can't sign my name because, with volunteer departments around here, like the fire chief has to sign off on the training requirements that the members meet, all that good stuff. And he couldn't do it. So he resigned and stepped down. He's just a firefighter now, which you don't meet a lot of individuals that would do that. So my question to you is, how do you keep your members engaged? Because what I like about this is you're in an area where you're not running a ton of calls, but you still get calls. And you're also still having that, hey, this type of call can happen here. It may not have happened yet, but it's just a matter of time. So how do you keep that standard engaged for, let's say, if I was a member and I was like, well, I don't want to do this.
So it was definitely a gradual increase with our training levels. So, from when I started as the training officer for the department, it was one of those things where, I started adding a little bit more, a little bit more, and gradually increasing what we were doing. And then I also would, kind of ask everybody, hey, what is something that you want to work on? Do we want to work on extrication? Do we want to work on, rapid intervention? Even, last night I asked them if, they wanted to work on triage because we were working on some things with training, and we have one of the fire sim programs that you can put,
Oh,
houses on fire and stuff like that.
yeah.
And my training officer did one with a bus accident, and it was a mass casualty and all that. And we started talking a little bit on the triage, and only the personnel that also do EMS really understood the triage side of things. So I asked them, is this something that you would like to work on? And it was a very strong yes. We want to understand what's going on here because we've made it pretty well known around our department that even if all you do is the fire side of things, there is a good chance the EMS department is going to need your assistance. So they've basically all kind of gotten to that point where they understand that basic firefighting side of things is no longer the norm. We've had enough interesting calls throughout time that have made people kind of think, oh yeah, that's never happened before. So maybe we should start working on those kind of things. I've as I kind of was pushing the training, I'd bring up, occasional like keynote speakers. One of them that I played a recording from would have been Bobby Halton when he did one of his keynotes at FDIC. And that was training for the night. We watch his 1 hour, keynote speech. And it was one of those things that it kind of just got everybody's attention that, hey, we got to be doing the job for the community. And it's always been a big push that that I've made that we're doing it for them. We're doing it for the community members, and that, people look up to us for, their worst day. And unfortunately, we have, to a point, these television shows that are out there are, they're making it more difficult because obviously you have all the television and movie magic that, lets them do all these fancy things. And, a lot of it's not exactly realistic, but because people have seen these television shows, they assume that we're able to do all this stuff. So I tell everybody that on the department, the people don't care if we're volunteer, paid on call, or career. They see firefighters, and they expect firefighters that they see on television in these television shows. So we have to, give them as close as possible to what they believe a firefighter is. So we need to do the extra training and learn the extra skill sets to be able to give them what they think every firefighter should be. So, and that's definitely helped in the department. And then I always ask them, which, I mean, we see it on social media, people post it all the time. Are you the firefighter you would want showing up to your family's call? And that definitely helps hit home enough that they're like, oh yeah, we definitely, we should be doing more. We get the occasional firefighter on the department that, will complain or whatever. Every once in a while, yeah, somebody will say to another guy on the or well, another firefighter, I should be careful how I say it. We do have a female firefighter as well. So, but, we have the occasional one, oh, the chief's just trying to make us a career department. Or one of my training officers is a career firefighter as well. So, oh, he's just trying to make it a career department. And it's like, I try to make it known to them, I'm not trying to make us a career department. Yeah, would it be great if someday this could be a career department? It'd be amazing. Especially for the size of our community. It's not going to happen anytime soon. But I want that high level professionalism that knows what they're doing for the community when they need it. So, usually if I explain things a certain way, it's enough to get them to understand, why when I took over as chief, we decided to change from our crosslays being flat load to a Minuteman load. Why?
How'd you sell that one?
Basically showed them how quick it was to unload, and they're like, well, this is actually pretty sweet because one person was able to grab the Minuteman and run with it versus we always had somebody else sitting by the truck having to make sure it all came out. The smooth bore. We didn't have smooth bores on the trucks. That was something. Once I became chief, I started transitioning our crosslays to smooth bores. That was another one that, we had a few that were perfectly fine. They didn't care one way or the other. And then I had a few that I kind of had to explain to them, my reasoning behind it. And yeah, is it necessarily, still partially opinion based? It's always going to be. We can see the science that, UL has put out on it and stuff like that, but it's still in the end is going to become opinion based. And I just told them, to me, I'm looking at a lot more water coming out at a higher rate to knock down more fire. I mean, it's basically, your thermodynamics. You're taking, GPMs kill BTUs. So, just trying to talk to them in a way that, lets them realize that, hey, this is how, we're going to do this to try to get, a bigger bang for our buck with the amount of personnel we have. So Minuteman to deploy it. Instead of two firefighters pulling that line, now you have one that can do it, while the other one's, grabbing some more tools or getting the door ready for you to make your entry, stuff like that. The smooth bore versus the fog nozzle. I've been in the room with, when it's been extremely hot conditions and, that fog nozzle's been opened up and I was being cooked by, by the room suddenly steaming. You get the guy that has it turned the wrong way and it becomes painful real quick. So, and it's one of those things too, though, at the same time, if I had to only use the fog nozzle, yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And, you get that whole question of, well, what about steaming your victims? Well, if somebody is stuck in a fire, I think they would probably rather get steam burns versus burning to death. So, if we have to do an attack that requires us to, start knocking that fire down before we find the victim, and we're using a fog nozzle that, yeah, can produce some steam, I'd still, if it was me, I'll take a few burns versus no, not being alive. So, it's one of those things that, just trying to talk to people in the department and given the pros and cons. And in most cases, the pros always outweigh the cons. And it's anytime that we get new equipment, we kind of base the pros versus cons. And so far, very rare that when we decide to get something new that they say no because we have enough pros that show why we need it.
One of the things that attracted me to you was the post that you made regarding instructors should be in the same attire as the students. And I saw it, I screenshotted it, I sent it to a buddy of mine because when I help him assist with instruction, whether it's like certs or ladders or whatever the students are in, we are in, because both of us have experience where it could be hot out and we're in coat, pants, helmet, gloves, we're sweating, we're doing it, and the instructor is maybe in pants, but they have a t-shirt on, they have a hat on, they're sweating, but they're not sweating like us, and they're telling us to do this, we're doing this wrong. And it was like, for me, I respect an instructor that's going to be in the same sort of gear as the students, because we're suffering together. And so, I saw that post and I was like, hell yeah, because I know of instructors that whether they're not seeing it or they are just like, I'm not doing it because I'm not one of the students, to me, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, so that's a big thing that I've always been big on is whatever the firefighters that are learning are wearing. Yeah, if I'm teaching it, I should be wearing the same thing. It's really easy for me to be dressed in a pair of bunker pants and my helmet with a t-shirt on and move and show them what needs to be done when it's 90 degrees outside, and then they go to do it and they're hot, they're burning out faster. They already have jacket, which is cumbersome, especially depending on what they're carrying in their gear and all that. So it's one of those things. It's like, you can't tell firefighters how they're supposed to be doing something, or just in general, anything you're teaching. You cannot tell them this is how you do it, but not show them with the same gear. I've had instructors that, they couldn't buckle their waist belt of their SCBA because they were too big, and they're telling us how to do the job. And it's like, well, why don't you show us? And they can't because they're too damn big. And in reality, shouldn't be teaching in the first place because they can't do the job. The instructors that just in general won't wear any of the gear, won't show the firefighters. They'll explain it, but then they won't show them. It's like, I'm very hands-on when I need to, when I'm learning, I need to learn hands-on. But I also need somebody to show me hands-on how it's being done. So if they're not showing me, how am I supposed to know the technique that you're learning? Because I can easily explain something in words and expect somebody to know how to do it. But without showing them, all it takes is me to, I talk differently from the next person. So something that I'm explaining in my head makes sense to them. They may be like, what the hell are you talking about? So yeah, you need to be teaching, in the exact same gear and basically format of what your students are doing. If you are teaching, a firefighter how to, progress with a charged hose line, and you're only doing it in a pair of BDU pants and a t-shirt, it's not going to show them anything. Whereas, if you actually are doing it in your gear with an air pack on, you're going to show them how you want them to progress with it. And if you can, do it in an environment other than a parking lot, it'd be much more amazing. It's one of those things that, given the initial, this is the movements in a parking lot or an apparatus bay, isn't a problem. It's when you don't go past that.
100%.
You have to go past that. And I know I had that post, in fact, did have some people asking about that because I worded it just right that, some people meant or thought that I meant that you immediately have to be full gear. And it's like, that's not what I meant. And I know I clarified in the comments, but you can't, obviously you can't just throw them in 100% full gear right off the bat and be like, okay, this is how you do it.
That's right.
It's that whole, crawl before you walk, walk before you run thing. But, at the same time, they still have to have somebody showing them how to do it in a way that, they're going to see the final outcome. So, I do that when with my students. I do it with the firefighters on my department where, I might be the one in full gear and they might not be in full gear yet when I first show them, so they can see, how it's going to look in the end. And then we'll work through it. We'll do a few times without, and then we'll start building up from it. It might be a thing where it might all be in one training night, and then it might be a thing where, it's in multiple trainings over multiple, training sessions. So, we've our department's become fortunate enough that we have a training facility that we share with two other departments. So, we do quarterly training with them, and we can go there any other time for training and, work in our training building so that we can work inside in the dark under, not smoke conditions. We don't burn in it. We use, the fake smoke in there. But, all that stuff that we're able to at least take those skills and progress. And, generally, even though I might just be, when we're going through scenarios, I might be following them through the building with thermal imagers so I can see where they are. I'm still wearing full gear because they're wearing full gear. So if they're sweating, I'm sweating.
Facts.
So I see a lot of the instructors that don't do that out there. And, it's like, it doesn't work. I mean, if you're just observing, from afar, it ain't a big deal. If you're overseeing an entire, training, I don't necessarily expect you to, because you're going from one scenario to the next, just verifying everybody's okay and everything's going on. But if you're the initial instructor, you're working with that crew, instructing them, to me, you should be right there with them. You should be set for the trenches just like they are.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. With that being said, you mentioned earlier outside training, going to outside training. So I know for a fact that most likely you are a proponent for that. But if one of your members wants to attend something, how does that work? Because obviously, you mentioned FDIC, you listen to podcasts, and you've taken leadership classes to make yourself a better leader. So what's your take on outside training, and do you allow your members to also do that?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, I mean, that outside training is definitely a big thing that should be done in the fire service. Get yourself outside of that box of your department or your local departments. You get outside that box when you go to that outside training. If I have firefighters that want to go to that outside training, I'm all for it. If they need my approval, boom, you're signed up for that approval. So we actually worked it out within our department. We have a certain amount set aside every year specifically for that. So if somebody wants to go to a training, outside of the area or whatever, basically, it's kind of a, you pay for it up front and then prove that you went, because unfortunately we know there's those people that you're going to pay for it as a department, and then last minute they're going to cancel. And then all of a sudden now the department's out money. So we kind of set it up so they pay for it up front and then we'll reimburse it. But we still want them to be able to train. So if it's something that it's a little bit more expensive and they can't pay for it, we'll decide, kind of, hey, is this something that, we know you're for sure going to go to? And we can adjust it from there, because we want, as a department as a whole, we want people to be able to experience outside training. So I have, members that they'll jump on it if they can get it. And then there's members on the department that they'll never go to an outside training. So it was originally, we were going to set up every firefighter had a certain amount every year they could use, but then it just kind of, we took it as a, well, this is how much we're going to set aside and pull from that. Because if, this firefighter wants to go to five trainings a year, he's going to deplete his in no time. But then this firefighter over here doesn't go to outside training at all. He's going to constantly have it. So it's like, well, we'll just set aside an actual kind of a budget for it, out of basically fundraised money. Plus, I do have some that's actually in the actual official budget that's set aside for training as well. So, but that's primarily set aside more for your tech school trainings and stuff like that versus, your outside training. But I definitely encourage outside training quite a bit. I used to just go and do a lot of the outside training, pay it out of my pocket, didn't really ask permission. It was more of a forgiveness kind of thing, go do it. And if I got jacked up for taking my gear and going to an extra training, well, then I got jacked up about it. But, now, yeah, you're gonna, if anything, my biggest thing, even if they don't want the department to pay for it, they want to go on their own, I generally just want to know that they're going to do it. So if I walk in the station and I notice an SCBA missing, be like, okay, why is this, not here? Because we have five packs on the wall that are specifically for training purposes. And well, not, I shouldn't say specifically, they're kind of backups as well, but those are the ones I want you to take to training first. So the same as all the other trucks have, but they're extras that, that way you're not taking it out of a truck. So, but know, yeah, if I walk in and all of a sudden it's like there's supposed to be five, but there's four, where'd they go? You know, oh, okay, such and such went to this training today, you know, then I at least know. But other than that, you know, you want to go to a bunch of trainings, go to a bunch of trainings. You know, it's better for the community the more that you go and train, especially, you know, with the fact that we aren't fighting fires every single day. You know, we're not doing car accidents every single day. You know, granted, yeah, I have no problems think with, you know, my firefighters when it comes to a car accident scene. We do enough of them that they know exactly what to do. But there's still, you know, at a fire call, you know, a structure fire, there's still that occasional at first a little bit of hesitation because we don't do them as often. You know, so the more training you can do with it, obviously, the better it becomes. And by doing those outside trainings, you know, yes, it's a training fire. It's generally a relatively controlled environment, but it's still going to help with that, you know, some of that stuff in the back of the head. I always tell my firefighters, I'm like, you know, there's nothing wrong on this job with being scared. If you are not scared when you're going into a burning building, I don't know if I can trust you. You know, I tell them all the time, yeah, freaking, I have a slight fear in the back of my head with every call we run because, you know, am I going to screw up and not go home? Is somebody else going to make a mistake and not go home? Am I going to make a call that's going to cause somebody to not go home? So, you know, I have all those things that run in the back of my head. And I've always had that, you know, since getting into EMS and fire, you know, am I going to make a mistake? Which has kept me from making a lot of mistakes because it gives me, you know, I'm taking and thinking about it more to make sure that I'm, you know, concentrating on the job. I'm not thinking about, oh, what am I going to do after this fire? You know, I'm thinking about the next step at the fire. So, and that's partially because you have that little bit of fear, which helps, you know, keep that adrenaline up that keeps you going, you know, and it helps, my opinion, it helps clear your head a little bit if you have that in the back of your head. You know, I'm not afraid to say that, you know, I still get a little bit of fear in the back. So.
No, I mean, you should. I mean, if you're not, like, do you have like a soul? Or I mean, not like a soul, but like it's the unknown. We are going into a structure that we have no idea the layout, no idea where anything is. Yes, we have tools, we have technology that we can use that can kind of help us reading smoke. All right, doing a 360, the fire's here, and as you're walking up to the structure, you're doing your size up. So there are things that can help us. But yeah, you should have a little bit of like, oof, okay, get ready to do this. Let's go do it. So I
Oh, yeah,
totally,
definitely.
100%,
And
I get you.
that's just it. I mean, you know, you can have four buildings that were built by the same exact, you know, contractor and builder with, you know, they're all built the same material, but when it comes down to it, they're all going to burn different. So, you know, you can go into, you know, building number four and be like, oh yeah, building number one burned before, and this is what happened. You can't just walk in there freaking not afraid because, oh, well, yeah, it's going to do this. Well, it's not going to. It's going to be different every single time. So, you know, it doesn't matter if the buildings are built 100% identical with the same fire load and everything, it's going to be a different fire. So, yeah, you should be, you know, on top of your game, which means in reality, you should be a little bit fearful of what's going to happen next because, you know, you get complacent on it, and complacency is going to end up injuring or killing you or someone else. You know, last thing I want to do is freaking get complacent and, you know, kill one of my firefighters because I thought that, oh, this building and this building are the same, you know, and not think it through. So that's definitely a thing that I do think of is, you know, shit can hit the fan real quick. We, you know, on some of the smallest calls, you know, we hell, car act or the car fire we did on 4th of July, it was, you know, it was standard regular car fire, but he must have just filled his fuel tank because 40 gallons of fuel, and the tank dropped, put a small pinhole in it, and it was just enough that it just kept coming out. And every time we got the fire knocked down, it flared right back up again. And then, we had some water issues, and so everything just kind of kept falling, falling apart throughout, the entire fire. And it's like, by going into it with a mindset that, yeah, something bad could happen, it actually, when it does happen, keeps you a little bit calmer, I guess you could say, because, I expect the worst of it. I don't want to go in there thinking, oh yeah, this is going to be a quick knockdown and then we're going to be home in 15 minutes. I think ahead of, okay, this could happen. This could happen. We're on a main highway on the 4th of July, start looking at all the different things that could potentially happen. So then when those bad things don't happen, it's like, yeah, this was an awesome freaking job. And if we do have some things that happen that, you didn't want to happen, well, you can still look at it. Hey, we still got it done. So we still did an awesome job, even with all the crap that went wrong.
What's your take on recruitment and retention? What do you see the fire service doing good on, and where do you see that there could be some improvements?
So when it comes to recruitment and retention, I mean, the biggest problem isn't even so much the recruitment part of it. It's the retention part of it. We need to, once we do get the firefighters in, we need to come up with the ways to keep them. So some of the things that have, yeah, since I became chief, have I had people that have left? They didn't necessarily like my policies on things or whatever. But overall, department morale has gotten better because we've developed a better culture. So culture is probably the biggest, in my opinion, the biggest retention tool that you can use. You have a good culture, that builds the morale up of the firefighters, they're going to stick around. So, and for recruitment wise, make sure that they know there's a good culture. You're gonna unfortunately always have those firefighters on every department that are just that firefighter that's always just a grumpy SOB that just freaking, it feels like it's just always a convenience to them to be there, and unfortunately, they're also one of the first ones that is going to go to your newest members and talk about how shitty things are, and it's unfortunate that we have that. But, your biggest thing with it is you need to make sure that when you get those new members that do come on, you kind of point them into the direction of the firefighters that are there for them, that are going to teach them, the job, teach them the culture of the department. Back when I was assistant chief, morale was kind of low on the department, and I got challenge coins designed for the department, gave everybody on the department a challenge coin. Hey, this is to show, we're all one. We're all a family, we're all one, we're here for each other, and there's guys that I didn't expect to actually ever carry the challenge coin that, carry it on them all the time, because they were those firefighters that they were kind of always in the back corner, not really doing a lot of talking, and they didn't necessarily always get along with everyone. And it wasn't because they didn't like them. It was because they didn't understand how to connect with them. So something as little as a challenge coin was enough to connect everybody a little bit to start putting them on that, page to moving forward with a better culture. And then once I became chief, we started making the changes where, we did a lot more things, as a group of firefighters. One of my firefighters owns a axe throwing shop, so you throw axes at the target and everything. There's a bunch of us that will go there and hang out and with each other, and it's kind of the meeting after the meeting. We'll go there, bullshit, and solve all the world's problems there and stuff like that. But it's kind of it's the thing is we've made it an open invite to anybody on the department. There's we don't have the cliques. I mean, the cliques are still there to a point because there's always going to be that, well, I went through fire school with these guys, so these are the guys that I've grown up with in the department kind of thing. So you always are going to have that breakdown, unfortunately. But to be able to show that, well, our group is welcoming your group, outside the department as well. Come hang out. So having that culture, having a culture where, we show that we are there for the community. We do a lot for the community, from escorting school sports teams to, helping out different events or whatever, stuff like that. That culture, which has been there, we've done it, but we've kind of taken it that step higher. What used to be the one truck nobody likes doing the escort for, a sports team going to state championships now has become our two biggest, fanciest trucks and, making as much noise as possible and, things like that. And, the firefighters enjoy it as much as, those that were escorting, which then in the end, then all of a sudden they're out of school and done with high school and all that. Well, then they're like, oh, well, the fire department was there for me on, this day. Why don't I look into joining the fire department? And that's how we've gotten some of the people on the department is because of the things that we've done out in the community. And that's been kind of our recruitment basically is, doing things like that. I'll throw, a quick little recruitment post on social media saying, hey, we're looking for firefighters. And then all of a sudden, 2 days later, I got three applications for the fire department. So, it's so our recruitment side hasn't been horrible because we've been able to keep the retention side of it up, all because of the culture. Because, we all know firefighters. Firefighters talk to everybody. They talk to other firefighters. They talk, so if they're happy on the department, they're going to make sure other people also see that they're happy on the department, which then is eventually going to draw people in. I don't promise, a bunch of fires a year or, anything like that. I basically just say, hey, here's your fire department for your community. Come serve your community. Freaking, we pay for your training and make sure that you can do the job and, come do some cool shit. I mean, it's basically what it comes down to. So, and it's worked quite well. I mean, I've brought on, a decent amount of new firefighters and all that since I became chief. And I mean, you see some go, they don't stick around long. Unfortunately, one moved away to a different community, so we lost that one. Because our requirement is you live in our village or our township to be on the department. So, he moved to community two communities away. It's like, well, little far to be responding to our calls. And then another one that, just didn't have the time or whatever. And, so things like that. But, overall though, I think I've brought on more than I've really lost other than like that first month or two where I lost five or six the moment I became chief pretty much. But, you always have that when a new leader comes in, unfortunately, they're devoted to, the past leadership, and they don't want to make the change. So, kind of a, it happens, but,
Yeah. Okay. I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
I mean, right now, obviously, I'm sitting up, that top position of the department already.
Top of the mountain.
So,
Right.
yeah. So, I mean, I'd like to see myself in this position, still. I'd like to meet, see myself as the chief that has been able to push this department to the best it can be. That's really my goal, is to make sure that this department is that department that everybody looks to when, shit's hitting the fan. We show up and they're like, okay, Bondwell's crew is here. They're gonna tear some shit up, and they're going to make the bad things disappear, And I feel like I'm working on going in that direction and that goal, because we've developed that mentality of getting it done. But I just, that's my big thing, is I want to, continue to do that until I'm ready to hang it up. Because, to me, nothing feels better than seeing, that the department has moved in a direction that is going to be, the best for the people we serve. They pay for us to be out here. They pay their taxes. They pay for our equipment. They pay our firefighters' wages. We are their employees. Most of us don't look at it as a job because of the fact that we enjoy doing it so much, but it's still a job. I still technically have my bosses. I have the fire commission that I have to, to speak to when things go wrong. So, and I mean, I could do the wrong thing and they could turn around and tell me I'm done tomorrow. So, I still have to, make sure that I'm doing things correctly. But, I at least want to make sure that while I'm doing those things correctly for the community, I'm making sure the whole department is doing those things correctly, and to what the community expects of us. And if it's, expecting us to be like firefighters from, Chicago Fire freaking on television, if I can get it close, I'll try.
Yeah.
So, it's, I pride myself on, on leading a paid on-call department that does have a very, strong search culture now, and, actually wants to go inside of a, a structure and get to the seat of the fire as quick as possible. I've had calls where I mean, I was barely done with 360, and they were at the door and they were breaching and going in. And I mean, they were inside for 30 seconds, and you already had, had smoke conversion, and they're knocking it down, and I mean, in no time.
Right.
So it's one of those things that my mentality has, been enough to rub off on others in the department, that then just gradually it just flows right down the hill, and gets everybody on that same page. So, I mean, if I was done tomorrow, I think that, to me, what I have done already since I became chief of the department to get people interested in the job again, and, happy to do it, has been quite a bit for me to be happy with what I've done. It's one of those things that, I can lead the department to a certain point, but when it comes down to it, I also, without my firefighters being happy, I'm nothing. So, my firefighters, to me, are one of my priorities. When I became chief, I made it very well known that I am not about politics. I hate politics, can't stand politics. So I am not a political fire chief. So, I told them, I'm like, the community and the firefighters are my top priorities. So it's one of those things. Firefighters need something. I'm going to figure out a way to make sure that they get it because, without what they need, they aren't going to get the job done to, the way that the community wants it done. So yeah, it's really, like I said, it's really pretty much as long as the, before I hang it up, the department is still moving in a good direction. That's more than enough for me. I don't want to be that chief that's still hanging on as a chief at 70, 80 years old. Eventually I'm going to want to stop being, the chief. And whether it's step down and stay on the department or just retire from it altogether, I don't know. That that'll be when that day comes that I figure it out. But to me, eventually, I mean, me as a chief is going to become, irrelevant. Somebody new is going to come in with better ideas that is going to take the department to even that next level. I'm just a stepping stone. So eventually, somewhere down the line, somebody is going to be, be better at doing it than I am. And I can definitely say that I am far from believing that I am a great chief. So that's, there might be some things that the guys say are doing a good job at, but there's other things that they might not say it, but I can see it every once in a while when I say something. The look on their face tells me, yeah, that was stupid. So, and I'm willing to admit that I, I've definitely had my share of, bonehead moments since I became chief that, everybody's like, well, why did you do it that way? I have no idea. It seemed great at the time, but, and I guess it's one of those things that staying humble has kind of been what has helped me through this too. And, well, my wife making sure I stay humble because she will not let me live it down if I get a big hit. So, but yeah, it's like I said, it's been a ride so far and it's probably going to continue to be a ride, but that's kind of the way the game works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Chief, I appreciate you coming on, talking shop. I appreciate you accepting the invite.
Definitely. Thanks for
What I
inviting me.
love about doing this is, and I tell people this, whether you're 6 months in, 30 years experience, volunteer, career, combination, paid on call, 100,000 calls to 50 calls. The fire service as a whole, we all see the same thing. Everything's just on a different level, different scale, different grand. So I
Oh,
just want to say thank you for coming on and talking shop. And because your advice, your little gems and nuggets that you're dropping could potentially help the listener, whatever, in whatever situation or position they're in, kind of help themselves moving forward. So thank you.
definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm glad you invited me on. It's always nice to, talk shop and get this kind of stuff out there. Because,
Absolutely.
I learn from others, and even if one person learns from me, that's more than enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.